Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus and I welcome you to Sword and Sandal Cinema. We will start off our show with a Legends of Hercules segment. Recently on Mythic Gaming, I spoke about how I had reread the Marvel Champions that featured Hercules, and as a dungeon master, my mind could not help but going into how can I turn this into a series of adventures. So let me share that journey. It starts in Marvel Premiere number 26. Hercules is in California and on his way to giving a talk on Greek mythology. After putting out a raging fire, Herc and his companion Richard Fenster proceed on their way until confronted by a vengeful Typhon and his lover, the witch Scylla. A battle ensues between the Titan and the Olympian demigod. With the help of Father Zeus, Typhon and Scylla are returned to the realm of Hades. This tale continues then in Champions number 1. In Los Angeles, Iceman and Angel confront harpies who are seeking the goddess Venus. Meanwhile, Black Widow and Venus battle Amazons who are seeking Venus as well. Elsewhere, Ghost Rider fights Cerberus, who happens to be seeking Hercules. And Hercules, having given his lecture on Greek mythology, confers with his companion until they are attacked by future men. Mutates all who happen to be seeking Hercules. The future champions are now assembled just in time to face Lord Hades. It seems that the king of the underworld sent the harpies, Amazons, Cerberus, and the mutates to local Hercules and Venus. He declares that if Hercules does not wed Hippolyta and Venus does not wed Ares, the universe itself will die. Then this continues into Champions number 2. It is revealed that Ares, Hippolyta, and Pluto plan on overthrowing Zeus via legal loophole in a contract signed by the son of Zeus and in a clause of Olympian marriage customs. Hercules and Venus easily defeat their intended, but Pluto vanquishes the reluctant ones just as easily. The huntsman then vanquishes them yet again and then tackles the champions, who he defeats through the use of his vast power, his control over illusions, and the help of a fellow Titan. This continues in Champions number 3. The drama unfolds and the battle continues on Mount Olympus itself. We meet Zeus and Dionysus. We learn more of Pluto's diabolical plot and the nature of his hellish allies. The tables are turned, the truth is revealed, and a new superhero team is formed and returns to Earth with the blessing of Father Zeus. And having gone through that journey and before I proceeded to the next adventure of the champions, I decided to put together a scenario, and I've been working on it, and once it's done, I will share it with you here on Sword and Sandal Cinema. In the interim, we go to Ron Carson's Coliseum, where Ron Carson and Andrea Tutrani will take us on a journey through Constantine and the Cross. Greetings and welcome, O Coliseum dwellers.
Good evening, Hercules. Sweetums, are you
and
there?
Good evening. Yes, good evening to both of you gentlemen. How are you tonight?
And to you, fine.
I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
I haven't seen Constantine the Cross in very many years, so I'm looking forward to revisiting it again with you and Andrea.
Well, you know, the reason why we selected to put the curtain up and choose this as an encore at the Coliseum is because, you know, we want to pay homage to your father, my uncle, slash godfather, Constantine, who very much is still near and dear in our hearts as his memory remains eternal and everlasting each and every day. Xadrfe, we miss him so dearly, and this would be a way to kind of like do a nice remembrance of him by re-showing this Peplum classic over here.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
A classic. Yes, wonderful. Excellent choice on the film, Ron. Congratulations.
Well, I thank you, Andrea. I couldn't have done it without you over here. That's why you're my partner in arms here, as we now are back in like full force here at the Coliseum. We do have a nice full house waiting to see this picture. And what we're going to open up with is, you know, we'll talk about the star of the movie, Cornel Wilde, who has done a few Peplum films in his days throughout his career. But this one probably is one of his most best known, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and that's actually heading towards, I don't want to say the end of his career, but most of his career was well before this film. He had quite an extensive career, actually beginning with a Broadway performance, which I didn't know. And my being a longtime fan of Cornel Wilde from his ever-popular and Academy Award-nominating role in A Song to Remember, of course, as the marvelous Frédéric Chopin, which happens to be my favorite film since I am a musician, doing a little research on him, realizing that he has covered many different genres of filming, along with Broadway, up to actually some Hitchcock. So, yeah, quite an extensive career indeed.
Absolutely. But in this particular role, he actually is the Emperor Constantine, who is best known as legalizing and adopting the realm of Christianity in the early 4th century.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, go ahead.
What I wanted to say that movie is not based on fact, but fiction, and it is based on a battle of the Milvian Bridge that took place in the year of 312 Anno Domini, A.D.
Right. I was going to state that, unfortunately, you know, my being in Mexico and having limited resources to YouTube and things like that, it was a little difficult for me to watch this movie because it was on YouTube and it was either a bootleg or just a poor version. The sound was very poor and the filming itself was very blurry. So I did not get a good view of the film in its entirety. I did watch as much as possible, but it was it was not an easy film for me to watch due to the fact that it was poorly broadcast. So one day I would like to see it in its entirety for real. So I might just have to get the DVD. So I'm assuming, Hercules, you have the DVD.
Somewhere in his archives, that movie is in there for sure, because I know that he would definitely have a motion picture which has his father's name, my uncle's name. And I remember they used to show this movie when we were in parochial school, Sadalfa. We actually were treated to a private screening of this. Each, you know, grade was at the auditorium. And because of the fact that it had the Greek overtones, we actually took time off from class, which was always a good thing for me. I didn't mind what the movie was. As long as I wasn't in the classroom and watching a film during school time, I was a happy camper.
I remember that when you'd walk into the classroom and see a projector, you'd go, oh, yippee! You knew you were going to watch something.
That's the memory that we have in our generation, is that they used to actually show major motion pictures while we were in school, and that was a real treat for us, especially at the place where Hercules and I went to school with, you know, we were in seventh heaven whenever we were away from the classroom over there at St. Spiridon, for sure.
And was it a Greek oriented school, or was it just general? Definitely.
No, it was Greek oriented, because what we did was we actually learned the basics of the language, the fundamentals, but Hercules and I were already well ahead of the other people in our classes because Greek, of course, was us a mainstay. I mean, I actually started speaking the language since I was age 2. Hercules, the same thing. When he was growing up, the majority of the time, our parents spoke Greek while we were all together, you know, with the family. So we had the one up. There was a lot of, you know, fellow students in our classes that couldn't really grasp the language. They were pretty much Greek Americans, but more slashed toward the American side than the Greek side.
Right. Well, that's like me. My parents being from Italy, however, my father came when he was just a few months old, and my mom when she was five. But my grandmother mm-hmm. and my aunts and uncles did not speak English. So my brother and I grew up as you, speaking fluent Italian as a child. So I think that's one of the greatest things you can give any child is a foreign language. I think that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Italian, you know, this whole film in your native language is also known as Constantino il Grande.
Yes, yes, I saw that. Now, let me ask you a question, Ron. maybe it was just me, or maybe it was, like I said, the poor film. Did you think that Cornel Wilde's act was a little bit overacting? I didn't find his part being quite as natural mm-hmm. as he has in previous films. Is that just my opinion, or did you find that?
Well, you know something, as much as I also admired Cornel Wilde, I remember there was an excellent movie I saw in the theater in the 60s. It was called The Naked Prey. I don't know if you remember that movie, Sweetums.
No, I do not. I do not, but I've heard of it.
It was actually like a Tarzan-based film. I think Hercules probably remembers it as well. I mean, do you recall The Naked Prey? I remember we saw that at the RKO a while back in the mid-60s.
Yes, I believe I have that on DVD someplace also.
And Cornel Wilde actually had remnants of Tarzan the Ape Man in that particular movie.
Uh-huh.
Well, remember, he was also in The Greatest Story Ever Told by DeMille.
Oh, a fascinating motion picture.
Oh,
with Max von
Sydow,
of course, who was Father Merrin in The Exorcist. He played Jesus Christ to the letter in more ways than one. There was an all-star cast, and one of my favorites was, of course, our Greek compadre Telly Savalas as Pontius Pilate.
Really? And did you know that Cornel Wilde turned down the role of Joshua in the Ten Commandments?
And
said that he didn't think it was the right part of his. And then he, of course, was very distraught afterwards, saying, well, that was a wrong move. He said that wouldn't
have
been
the
that
was like a costly mistake on his part for sure, in more ways than one. Because it's ironic that he actually worked with Cecil B., you know, DeMille later on, but that was the epic movie of all time in regard to the Old Testament.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So getting back to my question, did you find his acting in up to par with everything else? I found his acting a little overacting. I can't think of a better word, but a little overacting. I just found that it wasn't quite natural for him. Maybe it was just the role he was playing.
Well, that's probably a fair assessment, because here's some of the reviews that I found on the page over here with my notes over here regarding the reception of this picture. And the reviews were not as favorable as we thought they would be. For example, this is what the New York Times said, quote, "One of those ponderous costume tabloids that's trampled history to death and turned what's left of its fragments into boring banalities," unquote.
Wow. Harsh.
So they weren't pretty kind with this picture. The monthly film bulletin even was harsh and said, quote, this is what I'm reading here from that source, "The familiar ingredients of this tired spectacle, lions, fair-haired Christian girls, torture chambers, battles, assassination attempts, intrigue, fail to arouse any noticeable excitement in the director or the cast," unquote.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty tough. Wow.
So
I
would say
I'm
sorry. Go ahead, Andrea. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to overlap
you. No. That's I was going to say that maybe it might have been also, it was an incredibly long movie also. I think
that
might have had something to do with those comments. Yeah. Yeah.
2 hours even. So, I mean, that's pretty normal for a peplum film, anywhere between an hour and a half to 2.5 hours.
Yeah. So, okay.
That's
so
my assumption
was pretty spot on then. So my assumption was pretty
Your
spot
assumption
on.
Your assumption was spot on, Sweetums. That's why we have you as co-hostess of the Coliseum over here, because of the fact that you put your two cents in very, very kindly in more ways than one.
Thank you.
However, you're very welcome. His co-star, Belinda Lee, got some favorable reviews because she was very big actress across the pond in Europe, and they said that this was probably one of her most finest roles, where she played the part of Fausta.
Yes, I remember that. Reading that comment that she was highly acclaimed for that role. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, that's basically the movie, the monthly film bulletin kind of hit it on the spot over here. I mean, really, because that was all the, those were all the ingredients in the particular picture over here. And, of course, Hercules knows about the lions because that was his first labor out of 12.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And the man lion, and before then, the lion.
Yes. Toliondaritis nemeas, like they said,
yes,
in Greek. Toliondaritis nemeas.
Yep, the first penultimate labor.
That is correct. And 11 more to follow after that. And you've handled each and every one of them with flying colors in more ways than one. Now, in reference to Andrea mentioning about how she can actually view the film, you know, there are some options that I looked at here on my notes that you can actually tap into, Sweetums, over here. And I'm trying to look for the okay, here it is. I found the sheet over here. It is available for download if you go to the Internet Archive, okay?
All
right. It's also available at Letterboxd DVD, whatever that means.
Right. But
maybe
don't
Hercules knows more about Letterboxd DVDs because he's got like a ton of these sword and sandal films in his collection. So
I actually don't know what that is. I could look it up, though.
Okay. And if you really want to go more further into the picture, you can go to the IMDb website and at the TCM movie database. So this movie is actually, you know, garnering some, you know, background. But there are your two sources on how you can watch the movie, Andrea. Internet Archive and Letterboxd DVD format.
However, keep in mind one thing, that there are a lot of movies downloads, even on Prime Video, where I choose to watch them. It says not available in your country. They don't broadcast into Mexico because don't forget that my internet connection comes through a Mexican IP address. So a lot of places.
Now, are you in a different region when you're down in Mexico? Because the United States and Canada is on Region 1. I don't know if you're in a different label of regions when it comes to DVDs down there.
No. Yeah, no, that's okay. That a DVD is fine. I know what you're referring to is sometimes European DVDs are different. No, I'm okay with that.
Correct.
But a lot of these movies that are on Prime Video or on Hulu or all of Tubi, a lot of them just say not available in your country. For some strange reason. Even if I log on to Netflix Mexico, a lot of them just say not available in your country. So anyway.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a Mexico thing, I guess. It's a Mexico thing.
Sí, señorita, sí. As they say.
So now, taking one step backwards, when you mentioned about the lions, made me chuckle a little bit because, you know, being you guys are Greek heritage, I'm Italian heritage. My father being from Rome originally, one of my father's favorite lines used to be "feed them to the lions" because you know the Italians and sort of the Romans. We always refer to the Roman barbarians. Unfortunately, they have that stigma attached to them. So when you mention the lions, I remember my father saying "feed them to the lions." That was his favorite line. and I remember
interesting
that from
footnote.
My
Interesting
yes.
footnote about Cornell Wilde while he was filming this movie. He was actually scratched by a lion.
Yes, I read that. Isn't that amazing, huh?
And lived to tell about it.
That kind of reminds me, going back 2 months to the Beastmaster, when Mark Singer said that they couldn't have the lion or the tiger on stage with any of the animals because it would have eaten them. So,
oh, yeah.
See what happens?
Absolutely.
So here is something that I don't know if you even knew. This is another connection that I have with Cornell Wilde that I recently learned about also. Of course, being with his Academy Award nominated movie, The Song to Remember, as Frederick Chopin, and my being a fencer way back in the day, that he fenced for the Columbia Lions fencing team at Columbia University.
Oh, no kidding.
And he qualified for the U.S. fencing team in 1936 at the Summer Olympics. So quite interesting.
Wow.
Quite interesting. He also wrote a textbook and on fencing and wrote a play called Touché under a pseudonym of Clark Wales. Interesting fact I never knew. Yeah, interesting.
Well, I went to the Amazon website, and unfortunately, the DVD is currently unavailable in stock, but the only way you can get this picture is through video on VHS.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you still have your VCR, you're in luck.
No, I don't have it. VHS tapes get moldy very quickly down here.
Yes, they do.
Well, Hercules and I have quite a few of VHS tapes, so we still have our VCRs, if you can believe it.
Yeah,
I don't have a functioning one anymore.
I just have one that functions. It doesn't function anymore. And a lot of my tapes have gotten moldy. I look through my collection every now and then, and I've had to throw away so many tapes because they get moldy.
Wow.
Yes,
and were a lot of them stored in sandal films, cuz?
Yes, but fortunately I had, except for two or three that I couldn't find on DVD, I have them on DVD.
Okay.
And
yeah, because it's currently unavailable on DVD format on Amazon right now. So I don't know if it's going to be a difficult film for somebody who wants to actually put this in their collection. If you want to go online to get it, it's not very easy. That's another footnote that I wanted to bring along over here. So
A lot of those classics are not available too much anymore. That's why they're bootlegged on YouTube, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's actually, speaking of lions, a scene where Constantine actually views some fellow Christians as the fact that lions have, you know, devoured them for lunch or dinner, unfortunately. And that kind of freaked me out, that part. Remember that moment in the picture, Xavante?
Repeat it again. Which part of the picture?
When Constantine watches some of his fellow Christians be thrown to the lions, and the lions actually dig into them.
Yes. That was a shocking scene. I'm sorry, I was looking to learn more about letterboxing because you had asked before.
Oh, okay. Well,
That's a familiar scene in a lot of those sword and sandal movies, throwing the Christians to the lions. That's nothing new.
That's right.
Done it for a long time, right? Well,
that's right.
Even in the all popular Gladiator of the year 2000 with Russell Crowe, there you go.
Oh yes,
being fed to the lions. Yeah. So I think that will be a famous part of a lot of those movies till the end of time. It seems like the Christians will always be being thrown to the lions for some reason.
Yeah. Well, that's how some of the sword and sandal movies came about. They kind of recaptured the historical day of when that particular scene in life actually happened in more ways than one. Now, getting to musical score of this movie, this did have a nice musical score, if you remember, Andrea. And
yes.
The gentleman who was responsible is a fellow Italian of yours, Mario Nascimbeni. I hope I got that right.
You know, I read that, but I had never heard of him before. That's why I listened closely to the music, whatever part of it I could see.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I'd never heard of that composer before, but the music was very good. From the very beginning, from the opening credits, the music was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Good choice.
So you would say that you would give the film an A on musical content?
Absolutely. Definitely. Definitely. Now, I have a question for you, for both of you gentlemen. Sword and sandal movies do cover the popular films, do cover anywhere from the Greeks to the Romans. Where would you consider the origin? Is it more Greek or more Roman?
My opinion would be both.
Yeah.
Hercules?
Yeah, both. The mythological movies are mostly Greek, which the Romans adopted a lot of the Greek myths to their own mythology. So it's kind of like Greco-Roman myths, which are Roman adaptations of Greek originals. And the historicals, they seem to focus primarily on Rome or Italy. And there are Greek
right.
historicals, too, like the 300 Spartans and Alexander, for instance. But mostly the historicals are Roman. The definition's kind of blurry because some people include Egyptian. Some people also include Viking and Arthurian. So where you draw the line, it's primarily Greco-Roman. And then it has a lot of related type of movies.
Right. And are there any other cultures that it could, well, you just mentioned the Vikings, things like that, but does it branch off into any other cultures, maybe French or German at all, at any part of the history of sword and sandal cinema?
Yes, it branches off into other cultures as well. And again, it depends on how rigid you want to be with your definitions. Like some people just insist it's a Greco-Roman with an occasional Egyptian movie thrown in. Some people include the biblical ethics as well as the Christian movies that happened, the portray events that happened a few thousand years ago. So there really is no definition. There's a new Peplum movies, and Nick Dyack tonight's going to talk about those, and that's generally but not exclusively agreed to be anything Gladiator and after is considered new Peplum or neo-Peplum.
Right. So would the Ten Commandments be considered a Peplum?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
I definitely think because it has the ingredients of sword and sandal throughout the majority of the picture, I am in total agreement of that it is a Peplum film for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. Thank you very much for that information. Very
and
interesting.
Actually,
thank you.
I'm thinking of having a sword and sandal special in the not-too-distant future where we discuss that very question because it's come up a number of times. Where do you draw the lines? And there are no official lines, but for the purposes of our journey and what we're doing, I think it would help if we all agreed, like what we're talking about, at least when we talk about Peplum or sword and sandal movies.
Right.
Wonderful. Oh, that's I'm looking forward to that. It sounds very exciting.
Well, stay tuned. Hercules will let you know on his group pages, and he'll definitely fill you in as to when that will air, as a matter of fact.
Good. Excellent.
As you know, the majority of the cast in this movie were of Italian descent, Andrea. That's number one.
Yes. I know
with the
that.
Exception
yeah.
of Cornel Wilde, Belinda Lee, and Christine Kaufman, who portrayed the character of Livia in this picture.
Right. Cornel Wilde being of a Hungarian descent.
That is correct, yes. And I see that you're a very big fan of his, for sure.
I am a big fan of his. I truly am. And like I said, it all started when I was a child with that famous song to remember on the Million Dollar Movie, and then progressed
from right.
there. Yeah.
Well, to kind of like explain to our worldwide audience about the Million Dollar Movie, that's a New York City thing, New York metro area type of sidebar, because of the fact that we all grew up watching these types of films on television on WOR-TV
yes.
Channel 9, and the actual program was named The Million Dollar Movie. And
that's
Hercules
right.
and I would spend many a Saturday night or a Sunday afternoon watching these pictures on the old black and white TV sets that we had. And of course, Andrea probably remembers being as she's of New York Metro descent in Long Island. So, of course, Channel 9 was very popular out there in that neck of the woods, too. So we just
That's
wanted
right.
to clarify in case people were wondering, what are they talking about when it comes to the Million Dollar Movie? You have to be a New Yorker to pretty much associate with that.
Well, is it true that it was only in New York? I remember WOR and Channel 9, but it wasn't a tri-state area thing, or didn't it branch out past
Yeah,
New
it
York,
reached
or?
Jersey, you know, New York, New Jersey, Fairfield County, Connecticut. That's pretty much over the air.
Right.
If you were lucky
right.
enough to get a good antenna outside of the immediate broadcast area, you'd probably be able to get Channel 9. But gone are the days of analog TV, which I miss so much.
Yeah, yeah, well, Maybe you need to put the antenna out in the hall, Ron, to get better reception.
Just like in the TV or not TV episode of The Honeymooners.
That's right.
I am blasting on Captain Video!
And then, you know, you do know, of course, the big joke, which is not a joke. After Million Dollar Movie was over at 11 p.m., there really was the late show. Not the late show, but the late show. I remember that, too.
But I'll even jog your memory on this one, because Hercules and I would spend our Saturday nights at midnight watching IWA wrestling. Remember, Xavier?
Oh, I remember
wrestling, absolutely. I remember watching my grandma, who, of course, again, didn't speak English. We would watch wrestling. She loved wrestling. And back then, it was one of those VHS stations or something stations where you got...
it was on Channel 9. TV. It was on Channel 9 at midnight.
Right. And it would come through in Italian, and we used to watch Bruno Sammartino. That was her favorite wrestler. But back then, it was real wrestling. It wasn't like
real wrestling.
Real wrestling.
Well, Hercules and I, without fail, would stay up every Saturday night to watch this IWA wrestling, which was a real hoot. And we'd see such characters as Mil Mascaras and Dick the Bulldog Brower, Ernie Ladd, Big Tex McKenzie, the Mighty Igor. I mean,
I was a big
those
fan of
characters were just so awesome. They just, I look back and I just, LMAO, you know what I mean? In more ways than one. Hercules and I got a real kick out of watching that program every Saturday night. I made sure that I would be staying over with him every weekend so he could watch IWA wrestling on Channel 9 over when he was living in my old neighborhood of Washington Heights.
Many, many moons ago.
Yeah, 1975. Boy, oh boy, time sure flies when you're having fun. Don't you wish you guys were back in the 20th century? I do that every day of my life.
I don't know.
I
kind of like where I am now. I wish that many of the things we had back then were still around.
That's why I can associate with one of Andrea's favorite artists of all time, Prince. Whenever I play 1999 and I backsell the song, I say, oh, keep me in the 20th century, Your Royal Highness, please.
On that note, we need to start wrapping up. This has been a really great conversation. It's strolled on memory.
It has.
And Andrea, we have more in common culturally than I thought before. So that's very awesome that you remember these shows that we grew up with. Can you both share your contact information and some of the...
Yeah, we will. But before we do, I just want to let you know, of course, the film was shot in Europe. Outdoor locations were done in the former Yugoslavia, and studio work for Constantine and Across was done in the capital city of Roma. Just I wanted to put that in as a footnote. So ladies first, sweetums, go ahead. Contact info?
One second.
Andrea, did we lose her?
Okay. Sure. I can be reached on Facebook at Andrea Tutrani. There are other Tutranis, which is my family, but I'm the only Andrea there. So feel free and reach out. It would be a pleasure to contact with some of you listeners out there. Thank you very much for another fabulous evening. And Ron, take it away.
Thank you, sweetums. And always a pleasure to have you as my partner in arms in the Coliseum, where we always put on a really, really big shoe, as Ed Sullivan used to say.
That's right.
I am accessible on Facebook as well. Just go to Ron Carson, and if you'd like to friend me, I'd be very, very happy to share your memories and thoughts about the Sword and Sandal era. I am in quite a few Peplum groups, so you could look me up as well, where I do comment from time to time. I especially like Nick Whale and Stephen Smith's page, Peplum Paradise, which I definitely suggest, if you have not yet joined, by certainty, that should be appointment viewing when you're on social media. And I am on the air each and every weekday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on WSBS Radio in the beautiful Berkshires of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, which covers three states on the dial, including South County, Massachusetts, Northwestern Connecticut, and Eastern New York, but we are on the air worldwide. And you can get us on the free WSBS app. It won't cost you a thing. And Andrea has that, so she can attest to that for sure.
Yeah.
I send her shouts from
correct.
Time to time, and she adores that.
Yes, thank you.
And
I do.
Also, we are accessible via the website, WSBS.com. And if you're in our immediate broadcast area, our frequencies are 860 AM and 94.1 FM. I also host a Saturday morning show that starts at 7 o'clock as well. And I welcome the opportunity for all of the audience here who is listening to this broadcast to partake in my show as well. And, you know, it's a mission of entertaining you, the listener. I'm not in there to please myself. I pretty much like doing a broadcast where I'm doing my part in making your day a little bit better. And that's what I accomplish as a mission in life, that you basically want to, you know, pretty much have the people enjoy what you're presenting and not what you're doing yourself. And then a lot of my dear friends and mentors in radio practice, you know, gave me those fundamentals, and I still practice what they preach. God love them. You know what I mean?
And you do, and we love you for everything you do.
Love you too, sweetums. Thank you very much for, you know, presenting another positive feedback. And we're drawing the curtain down on this edition of the Coliseum once again. It's nice to have a full house where we're not, you know, masking up and not practicing social distancing, and people are having a wonderful time. And the beautiful part is that we do the movie outdoors instead of indoors, just like the old days, as we truly keep the past alive and kicking, so to speak. And that's all
great.
I have to say.
Okay,
wonderful.
Thank you
have
both.
A wonderful
look forward to next month, and I look forward to next week when I understand, Cuz, that you're going to be in the area.
Well, that's
so,
because the lovely lady is going to be visiting the old
that's
haunt.
Right.
So I'm going to be
that's
spending
right.
Saturday night with you on the 7th and all day Sunday with Andrea, my partner in arms over here, and a couple of selected
that's right.
folks from a, you know, group that we're on at Facebook, and we're going to have an afternoon of hilarity, as Jackie Gleason used to say.
And this fun.
May you enjoy.
Thank you, Hercules.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you,
Ron. I'll talk to you soon. Be well. Yahara.
All right.
Yahara.
Well.
I love you, Kaz. Kalinikta.
Kalinikta, Sarapo, and I'll talk to you soon.
And Andrea, love you too. Mwah.
23 Skidoo. Mwah. Love you. Have a great evening. Chat later.
And now we move to the last part of today's program, with Nicholas Dyack. Nicholas Dyack is, of course, a scholar from the edge of time. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Hey, good evening, Hercules. I'm doing all right. I hope you're doing well, too.
I'm doing well, like everyone else. There are tons of challenges during this time, but it's very stimulating. So I'm doing great.
Ed, I would agree. Tons of challenges. It's been hectic. It was a hectic weekend. But hey, we got to speak to you, just a couple days ago on Thursday.
Yeah.
So it's good to see you.
It's fantastic. And you are going to be taking us on a journey through two comic books, Neil Peplum. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. So since the pandemic started, I don't know how to explain it, but I've gotten more into looking at Kickstarter for comic books that have come out. And maybe just through sheer luck or just more people have more time to do creative stuff, there's a lot of comic books on Kickstarter, but there's been a lot of peplum-centric comic books there. And I've actually interviewed and reviewed some of those comics at my website already. So I guess these are, I guess I would call them pandemic peplum comics. But I would say in the past month, a couple of the ones that I backed have arrived in my mailbox. So it's been, you know, sitting there waiting for a good chance for me to actually read them. So I have. So I figure I'd talk about a couple of them on tonight's show.
That sounds awesome.
Okay, so the first one is called Band of Warriors. This is issue number one. Both of these are issue number ones. So Band of Warriors is a true kind of mythological sword and sandal peplum comic. This takes place back in 1400 BC. Issue one, and I'm conferring with my notes here because I have to read my own handwriting. It's one thing to write. It's one thing to actually read your own handwriting, and that's never issue number one focuses on King Minos, and this is the King Minos version from the Iliad. This is the one who rules over the island of Knossos, and I'm totally butchering that name, even though it's a real place. As we learned in our last episode, when I couldn't even say Metiste. Anyway, every year, King Minos has a celebration and sacrifice to Poseidon. Before, you know, there's the Minoan volcano that erupted. There's lots of wars going on. Well, now there's peace across the Mediterranean. In order to maintain that peace, King Minos has people from the mainland come over, and they basically bullfight, you know, if they win or lose or whatever, to appease Poseidon. And at the end of the festivities, they take an axe to the bull's head, and all will be right. This is also, in this issue, this festivity is also in honor of Georgios, who's King Minos' son, who's just turned 13. So this is his first ceremony. He's coming of age. He's going to be a ruler like his dad. Well, something goes awry. The person that's the tribute turns out to be an imposter of sorts. He's actually sent to infiltrate. His name is Theseus. He fills one of the executioners up with arrows, and he's like, I'm going to take you down, King Minos. And this is where the comic kind of, I think, is missing a couple frames, because I'm assuming at this point the city is under siege, because King Minos is like, all right, family, get out of here. Take him to a safe area. I will fend off these attackers and you know, save the day. We'll all meet again. And all of a sudden, he's inside of a burning house. So I get where it's going, but I think there might have been some exposition missing. So anyway, okay. King Minos is fighting through some buildings. He's got his wife and daughter with him. His son, Georgios, has now escaped. And he's confronted by Theseus, and Theseus is like, you know, this is baloney. Why do we have to do this every year? So King Minos and Theseus fight. King Minos has the upper hand, but ta-da! Theseus's father arrives, and his name is Agamemnon, and he has King Minos's ladies hostage. He's like, you must do what I say, and King Minos says, okay, this is the end of King Minos. And so in a very Game of Thrones fashion, King Minos is beheaded. And that's basically the end of issue one. So overall thoughts, it's an issue one. So it's kind of, you know, setting the chess pieces. Apparently, subsequent issues are going to bring in Celtic mythology and mix it with Greek mythology. And that's according to the back of the comic book and also the Kickstarter campaign. So it might be... I have a feeling it might be similar to, if you recall a couple months ago when we talked to Michael Oden, where he was having like different mythological deities fight each other. This might be going down a similar route, not like a tournament type thing, but because it's called Band of Warriors, I'm assuming what we're going to see is different folks from different mythologies teaming up to do something together. So that holds promise.
A series of ancient astronaut books that came out not too long ago that tie the Greek mythical beings with the Celtic mythical beings. And the guy's written like seven or eight books already on that. So I'm wondering if he draws from that sea of speculation.
Yeah, the only ancient astronauts I knew of are, you know, von Dynekens and, you know, through the Ancient Aliens TV show. So I don't know about the Greek cross Celtic one. So that's a pretty recent series, you're saying?
Yes, it's a pretty recent series of books. And also Hercules is in Celtic mythology. His son was Celtus, from where the Celts get their name from. And he's also associated with Ogmius and the Dagda, which are two figures of Celtic mythology. Some say he's the Dagda and that Ogmius is his son who became a druid. Others say that Hercules himself is Ogmius. And the Dagda is a different being. You have a lot of speculation from antiquity to now, but there are a lot of other connections too between Greek mythology and Celtic mythology. So that wherever he decided to draw from, he has a lot of material he can integrate into his tale.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see where it's going. So interesting comic, you know, again, classic Grecian sword and sandal here. The art is serviceable. It's not the greatest art. The characters look all right, but the backgrounds are kind of flat. I just feel like it's missing some pages or something because it jumps from celebration to, I'm assuming, a city under attack. And I'm like, but where are the attackers? Where's the invaders? There isn't any. What's going on here? So I think it's just kind of missing something. So that this might just be a first issue oopsie. But other than that, it's cool. I mean, King Minos, he looks Herculean on the cover. You know, he's got this, he's wearing a giant, lion head on his head. So it makes me think of the Nemean lion as his armor. He's got a giant gold axe. So the iconography is there. So not bad. I did an interview with the author, and now it's time to turn around and actually review it and discuss the comic. But, decent sword and sandal historic epic.
Well, good. No, that's great. That's great. I thought that King Minos was Hercules when I looked for it on the computer while you were speaking. I wanted to see if I can get visuals for what you were saying. And I thought the character that was King Minos was Hercules because of the lion skin.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like it. I'm a movie man, not a historian or a mythology man. But, when I took the Wikipedia to find out more about, King Minos, there's the deity version of him. There's the Homer version of him. There's a couple different versions of him. And, they kind of lean together. And just because since the setting of this was in Gnosis, I kind of went with, okay, they're basing this off the Homeric Iliad versions. Because this King Minos, he's not a deity. He's a human. I mean, he gets his head chopped off. And in fact, because there's a sacral element to it, again, I think I've talked about this in prior podcasts. I'm really interested in the work of René Girard, and he talks about violence and sacrifice where, civilizations would do sacrifice in order to stave off violence. Well, if I had to apply it to this comic, you're doing this sacrifice to Poseidon every year, and so far it seems to be working, and now in this issue, it's interrupted. So I'm guessing since it's in issue one, we're going to see a lot of violent stuff occurring. So I guess René Girard would affirm that and say, yeah, if they didn't perform their sacrifice, you're going to have a lot of violence coming along.
Yeah, they have a notice that this is a comic for mature readers, and they say there's violence, sexual references, and brief nudity in it.
No, this is an independent-made comic. In fact, there's some brief nudity in it. The women have, these shirts that kind of expose their boobs a little bit. It's not titillation, but it's still some nudity there. At the end, it shows King Minos' severed head with all his little dibbly bits coming out. That's kind of gruesome. But it's not an Avatar Press comic where it's every page is someone getting chainsawed in the house. The next thing I kickstarted and got, and this one just arrived maybe 2 weeks ago, is Teotl. And this is Mesoamerican peplum. I know some folks kind of cast the peplum net wide to kind of include Aztec civilization before, because you got movies like 2000 BC, and, there's not many, but they all have kind of the same visual cues, strong men, ancient civilizations and worlds, gods are smiling upon people. And so I saw this as kind of an Aztec peplum in comic book form. So I'm like, that looks interesting. Let's go for it. If I may, the art style in this one is superb. I love it. It reminds me a little like Frank Miller from 300. And that's probably why I really was drawn to it. However, the characters talk very modern day. They say things like, oh, man, I'm going to hook up with a princess. And it just sounds kind of anachronistic. But aside from the point, this is also an issue one. And the Kickstarter described this as a historic comic that takes the founding of the Aztec civilization in their city, Tenochtitlan, and they applied the sword and sorcery genre to it. So I'm like, oh, okay. So this one is also, you know, deals with sacrifice and, you know, a lot of combat type stuff. So in this story, the Aztecs are not the great power yet, you know, the power that the Spanish conquistadors would come to see. This is before. They're actually subservient to another tribe of folks called the, oh, where did I write that? Calhucas. I'm totally butchering that. And the Aztecs basically act as mercenaries for this other, you know, tribe of folks. They go out, they fight other tribes of folks. They take captives and they bring them back for sacrifices, you know, for prosperity and all that stuff. But there's one guy, and his name is Troya, and he's had enough of this. You know, the Aztecs, they got their own little like side city, but it's rubbish. It's full of dirt. They eat snakes. They're living in squalor. And all they are is they're being used for their brawn to do other people's dirty work. And so he keeps speaking up. He's like, enough is enough. You know, we should, like, do our own thing. We don't, you know, we're strong folk. We don't have to be subservient to this. So he kind of runs his mouth. And, of course, the issue ends with him, you know, one of those scenes where a whole bunch of people try to, you know, subdue him, and he's pretty successful, but at the end, you know, he takes a club to the back and down he goes, and he's off to possibly be sacrificed in issue two, but come on, he's shaping up to be the hero of this series, so that's probably not going to happen. But this is a good comic. I'll definitely have to reread it a couple times because I do struggle with the names, even though the dialogue is very colloquial. You know, they have these very long names with a lot of consonants in it. So that's on me, though. But I like it. You know, it's definitely telling the story of how a new nation is being founded. And it's a story that's, you know, not really told a lot. We're all familiar with the conquistadors arriving and, you know, the Aztecs and, you know, killing them all later, which is, you know, sad. So it's nice to see kind of a glory story about these folk. So this is a neat comic. And again, it has all the hallmarks of a sword and sandal genre. There's women, they're not in veils, but they're in these really eloquent outfits with these long feathers. The men wear skirts. They got big old shields and clubs. It's a very stylized different type of style of sword and sandal, and I dig it. You know, instead of the you know, the different coliseums and Roman, you know, pillars and statues, you have these, you know, stone cities that are kind of like steppy pyramids and everything. So it's like you're just kind of swapping one element for another element, and it works. I dig it.
So yeah, I also think the artwork, and it's beautiful. And the premise that you described is refreshingly original, so I got to check that out.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know what? You said it more obviously and succinctly than I could have. It is, it's very original. There was actually two Latin Mesoamerican peplum comics I kickstarted. The other one was called Aztlan, and I haven't received that yet, but I think it covers kind of similar territory. But I'm curious to see where they both go. Of course, when that one comes out, I'll have to talk about it here, but I'm digging it. I'm digging what these indie creators are doing with the neo-peplum genre, and not just, you know, applying it to Grecian and Roman stuff, but also applying it to other mythologies and other continents of other epics as well.
And now with August coming up and we're expanding into Zoom, I'm going to expand the number of sword and sandal shows that we have to include a wider variety of topics. So we'll have a conversation when that's about ready to start to see what your availability and what your thoughts are.
Cool. I am down. Yeah, you can do a lot with Zoom. You can export the audio, put it on Blog Talk Radio. You can upload it to YouTube and keep all the visuals. And in fact, if I may, and this is totally off topic, but, you know, 2 months ago, Michelle and I hosted our yearly Ann Radcliffe Academic Conference, and we did presentations, and I recorded my presentation in Zoom. I actually did it by myself. I just opened up presentation to me, but I recorded it and uploaded it to YouTube, and there we go. I had a presentation ready to go, and I really enjoyed it, so I think I might be taking some of my old academic presentations and doing the same thing with it, just
That'd
using
be
Zoom
awesome.
To record. Yeah.
Please share links, because I'm sure a lot of our group members and our audience would be interested in checking that out. I would certainly be interested in checking that out.
Cool. Yeah. Both Michelle and I, we've done so many conference presentations over like the last 15 years. It'd be nice to make those live again by having us record them in Zoom and upload them to YouTube. Of course, a lot of those presentations would later become book chapters in our different projects.
A lot of my writings hither and yon have been reworked and published as anthology entries. We're at the end of our journey, unfortunately. I really enjoyed your presentation, and it's whet my appetite to explore on my own. So thank you very much. Nick, how can people enter your world and explore your creativity?
I'm pretty easy to find. I'm at nickdiak.com. That's nickdiak.com. From there, you can find links to all my social medias and emails. I update my website definitely once a week. I do a roundup of personal, but also peplum news. You know, I go out there seeing what sword and sandal stuff is happening, and I try to aggregate it. But I also put all my, you know, writings up there, some of my short form essays or interviews I'm doing with other people. But that's the best way to keep tabs of what I'm doing.
Very awesome. And I shared with Brian Walker how you and Michelle used the site for some of the research that you did. He was very happy to hear that what he had been doing was of help to you.
Yeah. I got a soft spot for Brian's drive-in because it's extremely vaporwave. You know, it has all these late 90s, early 2000s web aesthetics to it. And, you know, in my formative years, you know, I was on GeoCities and Zoom making my own website with, you know, GIFs and repeating backgrounds and stuff. And his website's so nostalgic for that type of aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's nice. I dig it. You know, a lot of things nowadays are dynamic content, and that's not necessarily the best way to preserve things. Sometimes the old-fashioned static, you know, etchings in a stone way is to go, and the old style web aesthetics is definitely that.
Yeah, I remember 5 years ago, and it was, oh, wow, and I visited quite a lot after that throughout the year, so I'm really honored. Like, I'm honored to have you on the show. I'm honored to have Brian on the show as well. And one of the things I'd like to do, again, as we enter the Zoom and the audiovisual era, is to have conferences where we discuss things like what exactly is peplum, where do you draw the lines, and try to come up with a series that might not be universal, but that work for us in our various projects so we can support each other better.
I'm down with that because, you know me, I'm all about fluid genres, you know, toga and sandal versus sword and sandal versus peplum versus neo-peplum versus historic epic versus swashbuckler versus all that fun stuff. Pirate film.
So good. I'll put you down for that. Give my regards to Michelle, and thank you so very much, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
All right. I'll see you next month here, but I'll see you online a little bit later. You have a great rest of the week, sir.
You too, sir. And thanks to everybody who joined us tonight, whether you joined us by clicking a link or whether you phoned in or whether you're going to join us. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures.